Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Cipriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Cipriano, and I'm excited today to be speaking with Barry Zwicker. Barry Zwicker has recently made a film called The Great Conspiracy, the 9/11 news special you never saw. Barry is from Canada. He's Vision TV's media critic, and he's been doing that for the last 15-plus years. He's worked at The Globe, The Mail, The Toronto Star, taught at Ryerson University. He's a long-distance runner and a really wonderful person and looking for the truth. And Barry, you're just a truth teller, a really brave person, and a really loving person. So I'm thrilled to be seeing you here today as you've come all the way from Toronto because we're showing the film The Great Conspiracy here in the Bay Area. So, and in this film, I just want to let people know, you ask questions about the official U.S. government story about 9/11, and you talk about the 9/11 Commission. So, welcome, and you tell the audience about how you happened to come to do this. You also had an investigative conference in Toronto, so you've been real active in uncovering the cover-up. Hi.
Hello. And you're very kind, Sue. You're very kind. And I'm not sure I deserve as many kind words. I don't feel that I'm particularly brave, but I don't think I'm a coward either. And I really appreciate your saying that I'm a loving person. I do try to be. And of course, I fail sometimes, too often, actually. But I have been able to reduce my judgmentalism, shall we say. I'm the son of a preacher, and there's some, you know, moralization and judgmentalism involved in the church, although my father wasn't too much that way. But it takes years and years and years to work a small change in our characters. And I've been always striving to be less judgmental, more inclusive, and so on. And I guess finally it pays off because it gets into your reflex arcs. I can still be combative, but I don't hate very much. I really don't think I do that very much.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm working on that. I'll tell you, getting into my reflex arcs, it is indeed very hard to change our habits of mind.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, I am currently working on a book about 9/11, and I think it'll get done. I hope it'll be useful. And 9/11, the actual events, and I'd be happy to deal with these. You guide me. You stop me if I'm not going along paths that are going to benefit your listeners. But the middle of the book deals with 9/11, the huge anomalies of it. You know, why didn't a single U.S. jet interceptor turn a wheel until it was too late? In a drama in the skies that took almost 2 hours. It was the first anomaly to me. You asked how did I get involved. That was the first anomaly to me. I love aviation. I was jumping up and down in my living room, just screaming to the U.S. Air Force, come on, you guys, come on, you guys. There's, you know, and I was seeing there's planes in Pennsylvania, there's planes heading to Washington. I could not believe it. And that was my entree into it. And then there are the other anomalies that have followed, especially the fact that the Bush regime, I do say regime, I am using that word on purpose, stalled and stonewalled and did everything possible to prevent any kind of an independent investigation. And finally, 422 days after the events of 9/11, they announced that Henry Kissinger would be appointed to head up an allegedly independent investigation. And he's a master of cover-up himself, and he's been involved in many, many crimes, including the murder of the Chilean president in 1973 on September 11th of that year. And so these are the kinds of things that I deal with in my DVD, The Great Conspiracy, the 9/11 news special you never saw. But in the book I'm working on, that is there. This is central. This is the focus of my life. I'm really devoting the rest of my life into asking questions about the anomalies of 9/11. And, of course, in the course of asking questions, you really do more than ask questions. questions, because every question, in a way, is a statement, just through selection alone. Why is a given person asking a given question on this subject? Well, the person obviously already has a point of view, has a worldview, and has a subjective view that leads him or her to be very, very interested in that question. So automatically, it is a statement, and I recognize that. But I do still really try to pose things in terms of questions to myself and to others. So one of the central questions about 9/11 is, how come some people don't get it? How come some people could see no jet fighters turned up, and yet they are grow up in a culture in which the U.S. Air Force is the mightiest air force that ever existed, and it is, and yet not be curious about that, not ask questions about that? So the psychology interests me. And I just hope that it would interest your listeners. And I know John Leonard of Tree of Life Books, who has just published Webster Tarpley's new book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in the USA.
And we're going to be interviewing him next time.
Oh, wonderful. And Webster is just outside here taking in the sun in the backyard. This is a wonderful thing. And John Leonard said that he encouraged me. He said, Barry, I think you're on the right track to be looking into the psychology of 9/11. So, for instance, and this is I've been reading books and books and books on the human nervous system and neurophysiology and psychology, the construction of the brain and so on. There's some very, very good ones out, a lot of new research and put together in books by wonderful people. And so, one thing you could say is this, you could, and this is extremely rough and crude, and I wouldn't stick with it in the book, but just for purposes of brevity and economy, you could say that the response of people, or you could have categories of people's response to 9/11, and you could name three. So the first category of person, and I emphasize how crude this is really, but it's those people who just got it right away. They got it. And you know, we have what we call the intuitive. There's the brain in the belly, the intuitive. Some people say instinctive isn't really quite the right word. I'd like to go into that more, if I may.
I think you're right that this issue of why there's so much evidence and yet people just don't want to hear it, they don't want to believe it. With a lot of things, denial is just so pervasive that it's the most discouraging thing of all.
Well, it could be. It is really aggravating. But on the other hand, it needs to be understood. And so we have the first group, shall we say, and I don't know how many there are of us, but we just got it. There was something that caused us to say, this is fishy, one thing or another. Like naming all the villains within hours, where allegedly they couldn't catch any of these villains beforehand, and right after they do it, they know everything about them. So that's another one. So some people just got it right there, but most people didn't. Because
just got to add that this, I love this story about, I mean, I love it. It's kind of, I don't know what to say, with the passport. Everything is dematerialized. Everything on the planes, there's no nothing. But there's the passport of one of the alleged hijackers lying right there on the sidewalk two blocks away.
Yeah,
totally weird.
Miraculously escaped incineration in the fireball that destroyed virtually everything else. Well, so I'll just quickly name the other two categories and then come back to this one, because it is one of the most important, one of the most interesting, and one of the most important. So the second category is a category of people who did go along with the official story to begin with, and of course people were traumatized, and they still are. It was a huge, huge, horrible crime and event and tragedy and outrage. But over weeks or months or even years, they've been introduced or they've come across information that starts to make them question. Even as very belatedly, they start to ask the question, how come the U.S. Air Force didn't show up? And even after they read the 9/11 Commission Report, which should be called the 9/11 Omission Report, they find out that it doesn't really add up. And so then this is the second group that is able and willing for some reason to begin to ask questions. And then there's a third group, and I emphasize there aren't just three groups, but for today there's a third group that is appalled and outraged that anyone would even dare to question the official story. And I think they are a separate question, those people who they are really, I think, it's terrible for me to talk to a group of people that I just constructed a category of them, but I've met a few Not very many, to tell the truth. I don't think there are actually that many of these people who are absolutely hold to the official story. But there are some, as you know. And I think that they are, to use your word, in denial. And I think at the bottom of denial is fear. And I think it's not just one fear, it's a combination of fears. And and there are many of them. And I found out this is an extremely complicated subject. And one thing is, with people who fear to ask questions about, for instance, whether the president of their country might have been involved in a huge wrongdoing, and to the extent where a number of American citizens, a large number, were murdered. This is the stopper for some people. They just, that, my mind cannot get around that. It gets stopped right there. Well, they can imagine that George Bush maybe is involved in corruption with Enron, with his friend Kenny Lay and everything. You know, they can imagine he would lie about weapons of mass destruction, some of these people. But no, murdering Americans, that just cuts it. That is over the top. That is shocking, that is appalling, that is outrageous. Anyone who says that is obviously just unhinged. So that is where they stop. That is where they cannot proceed. But why cannot they proceed there? There has been huge wrongdoing by world leaders over all of world history. They have lied repeatedly, sometimes for what they consider good reasons, and they've engaged in deceptions of all kinds, and governments typically engage in huge amounts of secrecy. And secrecy is really a form of lying, because when we testify in a court, we're asked, well, we tell the truth, the whole truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So that even if we tell the truth and nothing but the truth, but it's not the whole truth, that's where secrecy comes in. We're withholding something. And when you withhold something, that can change entirely how you view what you did not withhold. I think this stuff is actually pretty simple in some respects. So let's go back, though, if we may. And you just stop me any time.
Okay, I just want to say something before you go back, because, and I've said this in many times, maybe listeners have heard me, but in fact, if we look around, well, it's sort of what you were just saying, that people, heads of government, including the United States, are doing horrible things all the time, killing Americans. I mean, a lot of it's not like on the front page of the corporate media in that fashion, but if you look very deeply into what's going on, you can see many, many different instances of that. So it's always amazing to me that even activists can't believe that they would go that far. When they go that far, these heads of state, at least in the United States, that far frequently. Anyway, I just had to add that.
Well, I think that's a very, very important thing to add. And as a matter of fact, it would be very instructive and a valuable patriotic thing to do in connection with all this, to draw up a list of all the government programs which involved the maiming or the death of Americans. Never mind a single non-American. But take all those tests they conducted in the 50s where they deliberately exposed army personnel and civilians to heavy-duty radiation in those tests out in Nevada. And that was done deliberately. And as a matter of fact, they even allowed radiation clouds to go over whole cities. And they knew what they were doing. They came in there with Geiger counters and they found out how much radiation, and they kept secret track of the health results. In other words, Americans have been used as guinea pigs in disgusting so-called medical experiments, without the knowledge of America. And this is very, very disappointing. And it's disappointing that people would not just open their eyes enough and be calm enough to say, yes, there's something to that. And yes, there's something to that. And of course, the thing is, people are busy with their own lives. And if they don't have a motivation to look into something, to become a student of something, in a way, I'm not going to sit in judgment and say, well, why aren't they better informed? And then after that, if they're well informed, why aren't they more passionate? Why aren't they angry? Why aren't they questioning? Why aren't they exercising their democratic duty to question and make their leaders accountable? All that kind of stuff. But I can't sit in judgment, because everybody has his or her own life to live. You got a mortgage, you've got wife, children, if you're a man, and so on. And so it's always going to be the case that perhaps the majority of people don't have the spare time, apart from the inclination, to become students of the large, overarching life and death and bread and butter issues of their time. And that is why perhaps with the Social Security business, I just think that is a personal personally, that's my opinion, it's just a crime in the making. I mean, to take Social Security money and put it into stocks. I mean, my God, the stock market has crashed repeatedly and historically. 1929, it looks like it's a big boondoggle to benefit people who stockbrokers and that whole community, the whole financial community of people who are involved in investment and stock broking. And so right there, why would people who would stand, there's a big danger that they would have a lot to lose in their old age and so on, why would they vote in favor of or believe a guy who's coming along and messing with Social Security? So people clearly will act against their own interests. And we see that again down through history. Look at all the Germans who supported Hitler. Hitler wasn't just a lone card, you know, just a lone gunman, as it were. He had huge support from most forces, most identifiable groupings in German society. The two groupings, and the only two identifiable groupings that opposed Hitler from the beginning and constantly throughout, were the socialists and the communists. And it was from the conscious left. This is historically indisputable. Two groupings, the socialists and the communists, were the ones who opposed Hitler from beginning to end. The army didn't oppose him, the nobility didn't, the middle class didn't, the labor unions didn't, no religion did. I mean, there were people in all those groupings who did, but the only two identifiable groupings were in the conscious left. And this, to me, is very important because everybody agrees, do they not, that Hitler was a horrible ideologue and he brought ruination to everybody, including, of course, his own people. And yet, the majority of those people, after a certain point, supported him.
I'm just going to break in and identify you. You are listening to my guest, Barry Zwicker, and Barry Zwicker is from Toronto, Canada, where he works with television. He's a media critic, and he is here in the Bay Area because we're showing his latest film, DVD, The Great Conspiracy, the 9/11 news special you never saw. So Barry is a student of all these things. I'm interested to hear how it's different in Canada, and I just read something on the internet that you wrote about comparing these times in the United States to Nazi Germany, so we're going to be out of time in no time at all, but I needed to identify who is this person.
Well, I actually have to enter a small correction, Sue, and that is that I have parted company with Vision TV. It's true I was with them for 15 years, and I parted company with them, and there were interesting and valid reasons for that, which we just simply can't go into. But it's just a matter of record. I mean, on very good terms with virtually everybody there, but it was political ultimately. I was squeezed out, and they had to pay me off my full contract, and it actually opened up doors. So it all, I think, has ended up for the best. And I don't, but there was a political angle to it, no question about that. So, you know, you can't avoid that. So what in the final moments, I hope it's going to be relevant to go on. And you're going to tell me when how much time we have left to go on and until I get the signal about the people who catch on early to wrongdoing by government. And let's just restrict it to that. Let's even leave out the corporate sector. There's a lot of distrust of the corporate sector. We know they have wonderful television commercials and then they rip us off. And they don't do it all for you. They do it all for themselves, basically, and so on. But we just take government alone. And so one of the books that I mentioned that is recently out, and I would recommend this book quite a bit. It's called Blink. The Power of Thinking Without Thinking, and it's written by Malcolm Gladwell, and he's a staff writer for The New Yorker. He was born and raised in England, lived in Canada, and now lives in New York City. And his previous book was called The Tipping Point, which is a very good book, too, about how when enough people, some sort of a significant fraction of people, begin to look at things a different way, and then after a little bit, bang, there's a tipping point, like when the Berlin Wall came down. And I think it's important to know that that can happen, because I think there's a growing number of us who question, a growing number of us who are concerned, a growing number of us who are actually angry and fearful to some extent about the growth of what we could call the national security state in the United States, the growth of policemen and spy agencies and the military of all kinds. And so that it's important that all of us who are concerned about these things speak out, because if we don't, then we won't get a tipping point. And if we don't get a tipping point, then we're going in the other direction. And that's where all the big resources are going, into the military and into spying and intelligence and worse. So Malcolm Gladwell says that, in fact, you don't have to analyze necessarily. You don't have to analyze very, very, very deeply, looking at all sorts of information using primarily the left side of your brain, the analytical side, in order to come to a valid conclusion about something, about a person or a project or a piece of art or whatever it is. And he said, in a blink, you can come to the correct conclusion. Because the right side of your brain, the pattern recognition side, your collective knowledge, and what he calls the adaptive unconscious, which is where the deeper things that have to do with survival and your urges, hate and lust and fear and ecstasy and so on, are lodged and always at work. We can't even help it. We have emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And these emotions pour out different hormones that involve the neurotransmitters and the synapses and so on. So there's a lot of what we think and feel we have no control over. These things happen automatically. And that is when someone just gets it, is suspicious, has a hunch about something. You see, that system is working there, and it should be listened to. It should absolutely be listened to. Now, it can also be wrong. These are first impressions, and first impressions can be wrong, but frequently they're correct. And in his book, Blink, Malcolm Gladwell gives numerous examples, and a lot of these are based on scientific studies involving, like at the University of Iowa, involving playing cards where the people were asked to just choose from red decks or blue decks, and it was a gambling exercise. In fact, it was rigged so that if you drew from the blue decks, you would tend to get more payoff cards, and they would pay off a bit more than the red deck. And the penalties in the red deck were a little bit greater. So in fact, for somebody to actually win, just turning over these cards one at a time and deciding whether to choose, there were four decks actually, two red and two blue, that all they had to figure out was that just draw from the blue deck, period. That's the way to win. That's the way to beat the house, draw from the blue decks. And so what happened, after an average of 40 cards turned over, the subjects began to catch on to that. But the thing is that far sooner than that, like after about 10 cards, they found on average people were beginning to change their behavior about how many blues they were drawing as opposed to how many reds. In other words, as he said, they were catching on before they knew they were catching on. And some people caught on after just four or five cards, and they had galvanic skin response detectors on and so on. So they're actually able to measure what was going on in the human nervous system. And some people were catching on really early. So I think that we need to turn our intuitions loose, but question them too, and that, in fact, regrettably, we need to be more skeptical about leaders. They have let us down through history. We should not adulate them. We should not make them into kings and monarchs. They are our servants. They should be serving us. They should be serving the public good. If we start to feel they're not doing it, we should listen to those feelings. And so that would be just part of what I would like to encourage, and I hope that's all very positive. You know, it's all very positive, very human, and also it's very up to date with the newest findings in neurophysiology.
Very interesting. Well, I'm going to look further into that, because I was one of those people that do pretty quick. I haven't certainly not changed my mind as I hear all the evidence about the official story of the U.S. government being lies, and what the real deal is, at least to the extent that we know. And I always say, well, how could we know everything? It's a cover-up. That's the deal. You can't be expected to know everything. So we have a very little time left here, Barry Zwicker. And I wonder what you would like to say during that time. I'm curious if you wanted to talk about Canada in comparison to the United States, or around this 9/11 thing, or about your gathering that you had in Canada, and then we'll let people know how to get your film.
Sure. I'll just try to be very quick here. I appreciate being asked about Canada, and a number of people do. I think there are some differences between Canada and the United States in general. We have so much in common, and as you you know, numerous Canadians have relatives and friends in the USA, so that this charge of anti-Americanism that's sometimes leveled against those of us who are opposed to Bush administration policies is just ludicrous. I combat that at every chance I get, because actually within Canada there are people who will say that those of us who are critical of U.S. foreign policy are anti-American, and my first inclination is to laugh in their face, but I actually don't do that. I combat them. I call them on it. And I think that's another thing we have to do, and not necessarily in a nasty way, but we need to call ourselves and others when obviously there's some intellectually bankrupt phraseology being thrown around. And so I've been very blessed in that most people have been awfully kind. I get thousands of emails of support and so on. It's mainly that the belief in the official story of 9/11, as they say in politics, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. And people can easily get, practically the best way to get my DVD is just to call my phone number in Toronto. And the number is 416, area code 416. And the number is easy to remember. It's 651-5588. So that's 416-651-5588. It's the best way to get my DVD. And I'm really loving being here again in the States, being with people like yourself and others. It's just a really gratifying thing to be here.
Mm-hmm. So when you had that conference, which I haven't really heard about, and it was a whole practically a year ago, right, that you had a conference in Toronto of gathering of just independent researchers. What can you say about that in 30 seconds?
In 30 seconds, it was generally a success. It was 7 days. It was very ambitious. There were about 40 presenters from three continents. And one of the presenters is staying with you today, Webster Tarpley. And it was a success in that we had a three-camera shoot for everything. So we did capture a tremendous amount of video that has been available, and we're selling it. But the turnout was lower than we hoped. But we anticipated that could happen. But it lives on in so many ways, so we feel it was very, very worthwhile. At the same time, we still have a financial debt left over that we have to pay from it, and that's it in a nutshell. We're glad we did it. It was worthwhile, and we got to pay off the debt.
And I want to remind people that Barry and all the other people who are researching this issue of the truth about 9/11 are independent. They're just regular people who've taken it upon, and I will include myself, I'm not a researcher, but I do shows, who've taken it upon ourselves to be activists around this issue. So it's not, for sure, people who are getting paid by their salaries to do this work. So give the phone number one more time, Barry.
The area code is 416, and the number is 651-5588. That's where you can buy the DVD, The Great Conspiracy, the 9/11 News Special You Never Saw. It's $23 U.S. plus shipping and handling. And I really want to thank you, Sue, for your wonderful program and for inviting me to be on it, and for the delightful and I hope useful discussion that we've had here. We could talk about it for years, and I no doubt we will be.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much, Barry Zwicker. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in hearing other of my programs and looking at my website, go to www.suesupriano.com. Sue Supriano is SueSupriano. And to order copies of my shows or just communicate with me, you can send me an email at sue@suesupriano.com. So the website is suesupriano.com and the email is sue@suesupriano.com. Thanks for listening.